Good afternoon. My name is Lynn, and I'll be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Immigrants and the Environment conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there'll be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Ms. Angela Kelly, you may begin your conference.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everyone. I have the pleasure of moderating today's telephonic press conference on the presentation of CAP's recent paper called From a Green Farce to a Green Future, Refuting False Claims About Immigrants and the Environment. The paper can be found on our website at AmericanProgress.org. And this is a fascinating paper because it examines the intersection of two pressing policy issues, both our nation's energy policies and our nation's immigration policies, and looks at both of them through a new light. These issues of our importance, given that opponents of immigration reform often make a very strong push to portray immigrants as culprits in the environmental debate, have gone as far as recently hosting a deceptively titled conference, Progressives for Immigration Reform, that was lightly attended, where they're trying to make the connection between immigrants and environmental concerns. What today's paper does and our two speakers is really debunks this myth. This paper was drafted by an environmental expert, and what it does is it examines the roles of immigrants in our country's environmental, in the country's environment, and it reaches enlightening conclusions. Not only does it debunk the false notion that somehow immigrants are the problem to our nation's environmental challenges, but it in fact offers analysis on how they are part of the solution. We'll first hear from Van Jones, who is a senior fellow at CAP, focusing on green-collar jobs and how cities are implementing job-creating climate solutions. Van Jones is a globally recognized award-winning pioneer in human rights and the clean energy economy. He's the co-founder of three successful nonprofit organizations. He's a best-selling author of a book that's the definitive book on green jobs. Van also served as a green jobs advisor in the Obama White House, and he's currently a senior policy advisor at Green for All. Van, thanks so much for finding the time to get on the call. You're a very busy man. And after hearing from Van, we'll be hearing from Jorge Madrid, who is the author of the paper. And Jorge is a research associate here at CAP for the energy policy team. He's assisting Van in spearheading the Green Opportunity Initiative. Before coming to CAP, Jorge worked as a legislative fellow in the office of Senator Menendez. And while in the Senate, he worked closely with the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, a task force on climate change and the green economy. And before that, he worked for the office of Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa, providing assistance there on clean energy technology. So we have with us two experts who actually know the field of the environment and energy policy, and I think can tear apart some of the myths and give us the reality on these important issues. So, Van?
Well, first of all, it's an honor to be here. This is central to my work and my life, and certainly my work here at CAP. I am a part, along with Jorge, of the Green Opportunity Initiative here at CAP, and it's one of our missions to connect national policy discussion about clean energy and the environment to those constituencies that have not traditionally had a voice in the clean energy discussion. That includes communities of color, women, Native Americans, low-income folks, and immigrants. We think it's important that we connect those communities that most need new opportunities in the economy and most need relief from environmental pollution to these solutions that will both create new jobs, more work, more wealth, and better health for all Americans. We want to make sure that work includes everybody. Unfortunately, we're not the only organization that is looking to draw connections and links between immigrant communities and environmental solutions. Unfortunately, there are other organizations that are trying to drive wedges between communities that are seeking solutions, and we want to oppose that. There is a greenwashing of hate that is going on in our country. We have seen a proliferation of reports that aim to blame immigrant communities for our environmental problems and use green concerns as a bludgeon against immigrant and low-income communities. And we decided to look into it. and try to figure out what these claims were, and Jorge did a great job. He'll present his findings. But it turns out that we can have an America that is green and prosperous and welcoming of newcomers, and that, in fact, in so many ways, immigrants give more than they take in America, and that is true when it comes to greening America, that immigrants, in fact, are not a problem or an obstacle to the greening of America. In fact, immigrant communities are disproportionate contributors to green solutions in America. It turns out that immigrant communities live greener lifestyles, more likely to use bikes and buses and carpools, more likely to recycle. They consume less overall, sometimes for economic reasons, also for cultural reasons. And the cities in which you have large numbers of immigrants actually tend to be less energy consumptive per capita than cities where you don't. Not only do they immigrant communities live greener lifestyles and are therefore contributors to the solution here, they also tend to support greener policies and have a recognition that green jobs and clean air are important values. And so it could be the case that this attack on immigrants, this sort of scapegoating attack on immigrant communities, this sort of greenwashing of hate, is possibly motivated not because immigrants are bad for the environment, but because the immigrant communities on the whole are so good for the environment. And I think it's important that we not let these kinds of false charges go unanswered and go unchallenged. And so I'm happy to be here with Jorge, who will present his findings in good order.
Thanks very much, Van. Jorge?
Thank you very much, Angie and Van, and for everyone who's called in and joined us. Just before we begin, I wanted to do a little bit of framing of the issue and to make clear that this is really not part of the mainstream environmental movement. These are fringe organizations. They use environmental arguments as a cover to attack immigrants. And as a resource, the Center for the New Community and the Southern Poverty Law Center have both documented these networks very well, exposed many of them, many of their funders and board members who are known members of anti-immigrant hate groups. And really, these groups have blamed immigrants for nearly every environmental challenge we face, everything from accelerating the effects of climate change to increasing our carbon footprints, causing traffic, causing urban sprawl. Immigrants were even blamed for the oil spill in the Gulf. More importantly, I think that a big part of the danger of this is it really clouds the real issue at hand. Immigration is certainly something that needs to be reformed in this country, but immigrants themselves are not part of the problem and should not be blamed for environmental challenges. But I think it also puts in jeopardy the political conversation towards reforming the immigration system, as well as achieving comprehensive clean energy and climate policy, and an attempt to really pit the two issues against each other. And also, I think it keeps us from focusing on the real issues that are harming our environment and keeping us from making real cuts in carbon and reducing our consumption habits and use of fossil fuels. We can go ahead and jump right into the data. I'll speak a little bit about what it means, and then we can move forward and speak about the greener future that we can look forward to that includes the contribution of immigrants. And the first one is we found that the 10 cities with the lightest carbon footprint in the United States have very rich immigrant populations, on average of about 26%. But some cities are close to reaching about 40% immigrant populations. Now, what does this tell us? Immigrants, especially recent immigrants, live very low-carbon, eco-friendly lifestyles. More than half of all U.S. immigrants live in high-density, large metropolitan cities. Now, these cities allow a very large amount of people to have a very modest impact on the environment. And as Van mentioned before, a higher percentage of immigrants versus non-immigrants use public transportation. They're nearly three times as likely to take the bus, twice as likely to use the train or bike to work, and almost three times as likely to carpool to work. And it should also be noted that the top 10 cities with the largest carbon footprint, the most polluting cities, actually have very, very small immigrant populations, somewhere between 3 and 5%. Now, this is important because one of the main talking points of a lot of the environmental front organizations that we mentioned is that immigrants have large carbon footprints and that they are going to accelerate the effects of climate change and that they undermine our nation's fight against climate change. And this really is just not the case. The data does not support this. In fact, our data shows that immigrant populations model good behavior for a very carbon-conscious community. And it turns out that immigrants are actually helping lower the carbon footprints of major cities. But this is not just by nature of having immigrants alone. These cities have enacted very smart policies that are able to cut carbon. And I think it also really emphasizes the need for smart policy on a national level. The rest of the report really exposes a lot more of these myths, and I think we'll take some questions afterwards about them if we have any curiosity. But some of those that we mentioned are that immigrants, in fact, do not cause urban sprawl, and that combating climate change will actually relieve some of the pressures of immigration and not the other way around. Next, we'll move forward into discussing how immigrants can be part of our environmental solutions. We already know that immigrants don't cause the environmental problems in this country, but data strongly suggests that immigrants can help us solve these problems. They're supporters of green policy, they're advocates against pollution and harmful emission, and they can be innovators and entrepreneurs to drive a new green economy. The first data point that we should note is that immigrant-rich communities, particularly the Latino community, overwhelmingly supports policies and candidates who are committed to fight global warming. And they also reject the notion that fighting global warming will hurt the economy. This was a poll conducted by the National Latino Coalition on Climate Change, and they found that no ethnic group is more likely to support policy against climate change. Now, with the midterm elections rapidly approaching, this information is huge. This is huge for environmental advocacy groups, groups of clean energy and green jobs, that they really should be bringing in Latinos and immigrants into their ranks. The Latino community represents the fastest growing demographic in the country, and they're going to be voting green. They're going to be supporting green candidates, and they're going to be calling for green jobs. And quite frankly, the environmental movement cannot afford to isolate this community or write them off or vilify them. Many organizations are already actively engaging these communities with much success. One example is the current No on Prop 23 campaign in California. They're enjoying support from the business community, the mainstream environmental community, but are also receiving significant support from immigrant groups and Latinos. And this is very important because without them, these kind of movements would be highly ineffective, especially in places with California with very large immigrant and Latino populations. And I think the environmental community needs to appreciate this and embrace this if we're going to reach our end goals. Now, we know some of the reasons how they will vote, but we'll talk a little bit about some of the reasons why. And we found that immigrant communities are the most vulnerable communities to the dangers of climate change, extreme weather events, and environmental hazards in both the air and water. And quite frankly, they've been defending the lives of their children and communities against these environmental hazards for generations. It's just much less documented. One of the most likely groups to live within a mile of toxic release facilities. They have the highest risks of cancer and respiratory illness from exposure to toxins. And I think one example of this is our nation's farm workers, 85% of whom are immigrants. And they're the groups most prone to be literally poisoned by pesticides and contaminants in the air and the drinking water, both at work and their homes. And it's not well known that immigrants were actually some of the original environmentalists. Immigrants fought alongside the up-and-coming environmental movement in the 1960s in the fight against using harmful pesticides on our fruits and vegetables, particularly the pesticide DDT. Now, this fight is actually considered to be the birth of the modern environmental movement, but is what is not widely known is that it was immigrant workers in the United Farm Workers Union that fought alongside environmentalists in order to achieve victory and get this harmful pesticide banned. And so while a lot of these trailblazing environmentalists were fighting to save the songbirds and their eggs, these farm workers were fighting to save their families from cancer and their children from birth defects. Now, this was the same fight, and it was the same victory, but the immigrant contribution was not widely recognized. And the movement unfortunately, moved on full speed ahead, largely leaving immigrants behind and isolated from the movement. Now, moving forward, we also find that not only are immigrants' communities eco-conscious, low-carbon, and active champions of the environment, but they are also a crucial part of the science and innovation that needs to occur in order for the United States to grow a cleaner economy and really have any hope of remaining competitive with China, who is just making massive investments in their research and innovation capacity building. Our report presents some striking evidence of the contributions that immigrants can make to the green economy, and I'll go ahead and list some of them now. The Immigration Policy Center found that half of all scientists and engineers with doctorate degrees are immigrants. Even more striking is almost 70% of the individuals who entered the science and engineering fields in the last 20 years are immigrants. Now, we should be clear, these are not the scientists and engineers that are taking American jobs. They are going to create American jobs. The report cites a study that finds that for every high-skilled immigrant hired in this country, at least 5 new jobs are created. And this is not just happening in the science and engineering fields. Another study cited in the report finds that first-generation immigrants founded the 22 of Los Angeles's 100 fastest-growing companies. Now, a lot of these companies are green companies, and there's a very strong entrepreneurial spirit in these immigrant communities, and the green economy is going to be one way that they're going to be able to expand their businesses and create more jobs and create a cleaner economy. So finally, I'll go ahead and close with this. If we're going to get serious about building a low-carbon economy and combating climate change, we absolutely need to include immigrants, not just because it's the right thing to do. We need these immigrants. We need them to vote for green policies, and we need them to support environmentally conscious candidates. We need them to purchase the environmentally friendly products and services and to raise protest when dirty energy and polluting interests want to set up shop in their communities and influence our national dialogue. And lastly, we need them to continue to help us innovate and engineer our way into a new clean energy economy.
Thank you very much, Jorge. If the operator could give participants instructions on how they could queue up to ask a question, that'd be great.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from Ron Esparza.
Yes, this is for Jorge. Several years ago, I'm not sure, maybe it might have been 10 years ago, there was someone with the Sierra Club that came out with a commentary or I'm not sure it was a report saying that immigrants were bad for the environment because of the huge growth in that immigrant community. Have you heard that, and did you do any research regarding just the growth of the number of immigrants in this country, whether the country could hold enough, and whether that would be bad for the environment?
Sure. Yes, we are familiar with this struggle that really went on in the leadership in the Sierra Club, and you know, fortunately, the group was able to have enough people of conscience that were able to protest against these voices who were trying to steer the Sierra Club towards this idea that population growth is really the thing that is not only driving climate change and accelerating those effects, but also hurting the environment. And I think that one of the most compelling evidence that we found is what I mentioned earlier, is that in the cities where these immigrants are actually residing, some of these cities having close to 40% immigrant populations, the per capita carbon footprint has actually remained stable, or in many cases has actually been reduced. And this largely suggests that it's because of these immigrant communities whose lifestyles are very low carbon have been able to help these larger cities achieve this. And in contrast, the cities that actually have very low immigrant populations end up having pretty significant carbon footprints. I think that evidence, along with what we already know about immigrants culturally really living very non-wasteful lifestyles, I think that's really a good counterpoint.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Javier Sierra.
And Javier, could you identify what outlet you're with, please?
Yes, I'm with the media team of the Sierra Club here in the legislative office here in Washington.
Okay.
I have a comment about the question that he was asked about the Sierra Club. First of all, the Sierra Club has never, ever produced any reports or any studies blaming the immigrants for any of the environmental problems of the country. Not 10 years ago, not 20 years ago, not in 1892 when it was founded. Second, what we have done, and we have done in two occasions already, is defeat these attempts of hostile takeovers by the groups that you guys were commenting about before, and that have been identified by the Southern Poverty Law Center in Alabama. And now it took an enormous amount of resources on the part of the Sierra Club and also a lot of hours of volunteering hours, including me and many others, to defeat these forces. So let me repeat again. Let me make this perfectly clear. The Sierra Club has never, ever produced any study blaming immigrants for any of our environmental problems. Thank you.
Thank you. How fortuitous to have you on the call to clear that up. Yeah. Dan, were you about to make a comment?
Well, the Sierra Club was a victim of these kinds of organizations. They were attempting to hijack the Sierra Club's good name and use it as a weapon against innocent communities. And the membership itself rallied and on two occasions, including 2004-2005, and beat back this kind of hatred. And that one of the reasons that Center for American Progress is so proud to enter the fray, and we're so proud of Jorge's report, is because we know that hatred and lies unchallenged can spread. And we think we have to be ever vigilant when we see these sort of outbreaks of scapegoating to push back. And I'm proud that we have Sierra Club on the line, and we're proud of that fight that they waged.
Yep. Good to have our allies with us. I just want to remind people, I forgot to mention at the top of the call that this call is being recorded. Operator, do we have anyone else in the queue?
No, ma'am.
All right, well, then that concludes this call. As I mentioned, the paper is on our website, AmericanProgress.org, and so please contact Jorge Madrid. His email information is also on the website if you have any questions. Thanks very much, all.
Thank you.
This concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect.